Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Soccer matters.
To Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro, remate y el gol! ¡Gol de oro! ¡Gol de oro! ¡Gol de Oribe!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters. We're going to lift the tempo just like the Houston Dynamo are against Real Salt Lake. The Dynamo are going to knock them off Saturday back at home. Get ready for it, 5 o'clock Central Time. We got a lot of winners here tonight that we have been very excited to get tickets to them. We've got Dustin, two Dustins, and an Eric have won the tickets tonight. So congratulations to Dustin, and Eric for winning tickets here tonight for the Dynamo Real Salt Lake playoffs. If you want to purchase them, HoustonDynamo.com. That's where you go get your tickets and get down there. There's finality. That's going to be a big one down there. The environment was excellent in Game 1 when the Dynamo won 2-1. All right, let's get some sound here from Ben Olsen. Victor Ariza remains with us. Here's Ben Olsen on playoff soccer.
I'm going to keep mentioning that this is playoff soccer, and there's real energy and commitment and more fouls, more tackles. So we have to find a way to combat that. But then there's still some connections out there that would have allowed us to, I think, expose them in a more dangerous way. And that just wasn't there on the night. But again, that's okay. That's what this looks like sometimes. And I love the expectations now that the Houston Dynamo have.
Well, that's what we want, right? We want high expectations. I don't think there's any question from Ben there, and he said this is playoff soccer. So when you talk about that, Victor, I think it goes back to the point you made earlier about the regular season. When you have a playoff system, you can take your foot off the pedal a little bit throughout the year with injury and with trying to put your team together, and you got to time it right. St. Louis didn't time it right. Sporting Kansas City's timing it right. The Dynamo coming into the playoffs, timing it right. So there you go. I think Ben Olsen pretty much lets you know that this thing gets ratcheted up in the playoffs.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned, I mean, they were, you know, about, what, less than 45 minutes away from moving along, right, having maybe an extra week of rest. Now they got to play another game on Saturday where they, you know, the season could end for them. I know we're expecting them to win and hopefully it all goes their way. But, you know, one bad day, you know, puts an end to all of this. And there is that expectation because of what we've seen them do, because of the players they have as well, right? Herrera, Carrasquilla, you know, and I think we all agree that comparative to Salt Lake, this is a better roster that should, with the home field advantage, go on to the next round.
So just to do some numbers, by the way, the numbers and the data changed a lot when Arango came in the game towards RSL, but the Dynamo only had 75% passing accuracy. That's lower than normal. RSL had 84. They actually had more total passes than the Houston Dynamo, 371 to 314, if you like data. The Dynamo had 5 shots on goal to 3. 14 shots overall for Salt Lake, only 7 for the Dynamo, but 5 out of 7 on target. And the possession went 53-46 in favor of Salt Lake. We told you about, you know, all the differing fouling and the breaking up of the game. And that's what they're going to do again here in Houston. They're going to want to break the rhythm of the Dynamo. They're going to do it through physicality. The Dynamo are going to have to hope that they get the protection that they feel they deserve from a referee when it comes to their style of play. So it's a big one on the weekend. we're going to see what happens with the Dynamo and RSL. And by the way, to your point, yeah, the Dynamo, I think things could have been a lot easier for them in games this year if, in fact, they could have gotten that second goal, for sure. And even if you go to the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup, that was so dominant in the first 45 minutes, the Dynamo over Inter Miami. I mean, they should have taken three goals out of that first half. That thing would have been done and dusted. And then all of a sudden you get an Inter Miami goal from Josef Martinez late, and your heart's beating a little bit. So timeliness of goals, taking their chances, being efficient, and that has been something that also Ben Olsen has brought out when he's talking about the Houston Dynamo and RSL. All right, let's do some sound here, Victor, and I want to get some of your reaction here. So, first off, Phil Neville is going to be the new coach of the Portland Timbers. Here's Phil Neville speaking after getting the job in the Rose City.
First things first, I've got to say it's probably one of my proudest days in football to be named head coach of this great organisation. I was fortunate enough in the last couple of months to have many opportunities, many coaching opportunities to take. And from the minute I met Ned and Merritt and saw the city, saw the club, in my life I've always followed my gut. And my gut said straight away that I had to follow this dream of becoming the Portland Timbers head coach. And when I got the news that I was the head coach, I think it was the best news that I'd had.
So that was Phil Neville. Now here's a guy that's represented England 59 times, played over 260 games for Manchester United, over 240 for Everton, and his proudest moment is being named the head coach of the Portland Timbers. I mean, you got to say the right things, and I'm not,
right.
I'm not, but come on, you play 59 times for England, you know, you've played in some of the most significant games in your career that very few even get to participate in. So, you know, that was a little bit, you know, he's been a commentator too on BBC, and he's done a whole lot of different things. He was involved with Canada's staff. He was the Inter Miami coach. You know, so how much do we think this is about name? We had a name choice in Houston that was made by in the past when Owen Coyle got picked, and there was this real seduction that took advantage of people who didn't really know football who hired him because of the Premier League. You know, how much do you think it's about that? And I would also say Phil Neville has done some good things. He's coached women's football. 2018 to 21, the English national team. He does understand MLS, I would think, after 2 years at Inter Miami.
Yes. You know, I think maybe similar to Ben Olsen, right? His career as a player, in Neville's case, is something that helps as well, getting a second chance in a different market. Maybe ownership or the GM up there in Portland thinks that, you know, maybe he had dealt a hard hand in Miami, right? We saw what that roster was earlier this year. They didn't quite have everything in order, but, you know, I guess only time will tell. I mean, that's the only thing I can say in that sense. But there's not a lot of fans that are very optimistic about this. It's the biggest thing, right? So he's arriving in Portland with not the
you
most
think
gracious
the,
of welcome.
Hold on, Victor. Hold on. Is there a backlash from Portland Timbers fans about him? I don't know why. I mean, he could end up being very, very good for them. I mean, this, you know, I mean, what do they want? To go outside of the league and pick somebody that's never been in MLS? I mean, there is some safety to the fact that he has already coached Inter Miami in this league.
Right, but he hadn't, you know, he hasn't, other than that, I mean, it's like he succeeded in the playoffs, right? I'm not in that market completely to be able to tell you, you know, how the Savarese thing went over, but that was a guy that got you to a couple of MLS Cup finals, right? So maybe, you know, maybe fans felt, you know, somebody that could get you back to that, right? I mean, MLS, you know, Portland was competing. I mean, we're talking about them in Seattle, right, in these last few years. It was either one of those two getting to the MLS Cup final, and I think that's sort of the expectation in Portland. And why not, with the fan base that they have, to shoot for that, and with a coach that hasn't necessarily been successful in MLS, Why should they believe that Phil Neville's going to be the guy to take them to another MLS Cup final?
Well, first of all, Savarese, you know, as much as we all love him as a coach and his personality and everything, he lost his team. I mean, you saw that right here in Houston. That team, whatever was going on there, the change had to be made because you had players that weren't running that night, and it was right in front of me, including Evander. When the Dynamo smoked Portland. So, it all depends on the options. So if you don't like Neville and you don't like the fact that Neville, I mean, you think the one thing is he's got prior MLS experience at Inter Miami, but then who would you want?
Well, that's the thing, right? And I mean, I think we sort of see, we had it here last year, right? We sort of see this recycling of coaches in around MLS teams. Very few really go outside of the bubble and bring somebody new in, maybe the way Atlanta did it, right, with Martino. Just somebody different, a new air, somebody that's won championships in other cultures. I mean, I think, again, you have the whole world to pick from, and when you see teams recycling some of these coaches, I just think maybe that's sort of the thinking, but... time will tell. Maybe Phil Neville, maybe this is his opportunity, much like Ben Olsen had a good first year here. Maybe Phil Neville will have things up and running in Portland next year.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. So we'll see what Phil Neville does in Portland. By the way, there were an awful lot of people who were not very high on Ben Olsen when he was signed. They wanted something more glamorous, and he's turned out to be pretty good. Him and his staff have put together a really, really good team. And I know everybody's long in the tooth about what happened in, Salt Lake or Sandy this past week. But look, I have a feeling they're going to come out. They're going to play exceptional this weekend. They're going to win game three. And then that will set up a home game against Sporting Kansas City. Victor, thank you very much for coming on tonight.
Thanks, Ben. Anytime.
All right. Victor Ariza, good stuff there. That's his Rocks Off by the Rolling Stones. John Daspit, Daspit Law Firm, presenting sponsor, Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. Coming up next, the head coach at Texas A&M, G. Guerrieri. They are in the NCAA tournament.
ESPN 97.5 on Twitch. We control the spice.
The worm is the spice. The spice is the worm.
Run, run, DM.
All right, let's continue on here tonight because on Monday, yesterday, the selection committee and the NCAA picked, along with the conference winners, the bracketing and the Division I women's soccer bracket is out. And, of course, right up the road, as they've done it 28 out of 29 years, Texas A&M under head coach G. Guerrieri once again in the tournament. G., thank you very much for coming on. First of all, does this ever get old?
No, I think maybe I get old, but the opportunity to dance in the NCAA tournament never gets old, and it's a real privilege that we've been able to take advantage of for going on three decades now. It's been awesome.
All right, the condensed schedule, I don't know how many years we've been talking about it. You come off the SEC tournament, you make a great run in the tournament. You get to the semifinals, you lose to Georgia 3-2 with 27 seconds left. You control large portions of the game, the data. But to advance in the tournament that deep is a very key thing when it comes to the selection committee, correct?
I think so. It shows how good our team is. And, unfortunately for us, like I said, we had 28 shots and we only scored two of them. We missed two penalty kicks in the game. That didn't show well, but over and over we always play one of the toughest schedules in the country. And, week after week, our players, put on a good show and there's a good product on the field. And we play with a lot of passion. We play with a lot of attacking gusto and we get after it. And so I think that the NCAA committee responded with what we would hope that, this is the type of team that you want competing for a national championship in their tournament. And, you know, is a team that is we've proven that we can play with anybody and beat anyone in the country on a given night. Now we can beat ourselves too. We're good enough to do that as well. but it really is fun. And so we were a little surprised that we were given the opportunity to host, because, you know, our RPI was, I think we're probably the lowest RPI to ever host a game in the first round. Part of that is probably a little bit on reputation of what Texas A&M soccer is all about, but also just, when you open up our resume and you look at what we've done this season and the wins we've had and the games that we've played, it becomes pretty obvious that this is that the Aggies are a really, really good and dangerous team. So now we're going to host this Friday night. We're going to host University of Colorado, which are also a really dangerous team. They finished the season really hot in the last year of the Pac-12. They're on a 4-game winning streak. They've played some really good teams, have beaten some good teams, have gotten a good draw against Southern Cal on the road. So it should be a very, very entertaining game for the neutral. And we're excited because it's a home football weekend here in Aggieland on Saturday. And, you know, we'll kind of get it rolling with our match on Friday night at Ellis Field.
Yeah, a lot going on this weekend athletically on the campus of Texas A&M. 28 out of 29 years, the Aggie soccer team under G. Guerrieri has gotten into the NCAA tournament. That one year you didn't. I mean, that is such a differing thing based on what you'd been doing consistently.
Yeah, you want to talk about
what,
referees?
Well, I want to know what went through your mind at that point, because it could have been some things that led to positivity, right?
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes you'll learn more about yourself when you stumble. And, you know, you have to do a deep dive. There were a lot of extenuating circumstances. Like I said, there were a lot of things that were out of our control, and you learn about that. Like I said, in the last game we played that season, you know, the referee came up to us and afterwards said, "Hey, I really apologize that, you know, about the calls that we scored goals in that game that he called back and, you know, pulled outside the box to give a free kick instead of the goal that was obviously a goal." And he apologized for it. And that eliminated us. That ended our season. And, you know, those are asterisks you don't get back. And you just have to shrug and say, okay, well, let's not make it so close that things like that can have such catastrophic, you know, ends and that can cause a casualty. So, you know, you have to look back at process, and you have to look back at what are the things that we have to do to be better every day, and what are the things that we do control, and what are the things that our players can control. And that was tough. There were a lot of things that you have to look at really hard, and it was tough on our players. That was a year that we had 7 forwards that were all injured at the same time. You know, just like what could go wrong kind of did go wrong. And you have to be able to adjust to life. And how do you adjust? And those were some tough questions to ask. And I'm proud of our women, because they've been able to answer those questions in the time since. And here we are again.
G. Guerrieri, longtime coach of Texas A&M. Big wins during the regular season over Alabama. Then you knocked off South Carolina in the SEC tournament. These are big wins. Again, position the SEC tournament for my listeners. It's an incredible soccer conference. Texas is going to come over and follow you guys in there with Angela Kelly in the future. But just talk about the degree of difficulty in the SEC and maybe stylistically how the teams play, if there is any commonality.
Well, the SEC is the number one RPI. RPI is the index by which college soccer is rated. It's a ratio that is done as far as strength of schedule and strength of teams. And the SEC from top to bottom is rated as number one. 8 of the teams got into the NCAA tournament this year. You know, when the Horns come in next year, that's another team that got in. They're they got on a hot streak at the end of the year in the Big 12. You know, only 3 teams from the Big 12 got into the into the NCAA tournament. The Longhorns, who finished fourth, I think, in the regular season, but got hot and won the tournament. That's a team that now comes over to the SEC next year. So add another quality opponent to the schedule for next year in the league. It is a dogfight, and there's some great coaches in the league. So it's such a science experiment every week, because it's the athletes in the league, the coaches in the league, every single game. The facilities, the surfaces are fantastic. The crowds, just what you have because of what football does in this conference, the resources are tremendous. The support for the student athletes across the board are tremendous. So every week is an amazing challenge. And every single game is usually a one goal game, one way or the other. You're always going to have a different type of challenge. So you have, on one end, you have Arkansas, which are Stoke City of sorts. They're super direct, super in your face. They win ugly. On the other side of the ledger, you have us, who we try to put the ball on the ground. We play fast. We move the ball quickly. Then you've got everything in between, and you've got teams that are, going to play in a low block. You've got teams that are going to play in a mid block. You've got teams that are going to stretch you wide and play with feet on the touch lines on either sideline. So it really is, from a footballer's mentality, you've got a smorgasbord of ideas and different types of concepts. And it really is, it's a fun league to watch. Because of the SEC network, it's all broadcast. It's all on, the ESPN app. It's been awesome. And what we've seen for women's football and the growth of it has been tremendous. And I'm fortunate in a lot of ways. I'm the luckiest guy in a lot of ways. But I'm also the chairperson for NCAA Division I Women's Coaches, and we're trying to expand our season. We're trying to stretch our season longer so that we play more single game weeks throughout the year, and use our platform to really expand what women's soccer can be. You look at what is happening with women's football around the world and how our crowds are growing. What is happening on the women's stage across the world, but especially what has happened in the United States for the last 25 years, and how it's gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. And we think that we've only scratched the surface as far as what our women represent and what these types of young women are doing. And here in the state of Texas, I mean, we're on the forefront. We have incredible young ladies coming through our youth systems, coming through our high schools, and especially coming through our college programs that are such great representatives of our families, our culture, and our universities. And the SEC is such a great platform to expose these stories and what these women are about. And, we're a great story right now. What we're going to be doing on Friday night in front of the 12th man here at Texas A&M is a great way to expose, what these women are all about. And I'm so lucky to be a part of it. I can't put it into words.
He's G. Guerrieri, head coach at Texas A&M, Friday night, NCAA round one, first round of the tournament, Colorado Ellis Field. Look, if you got youth soccer players, that's the place to go. Take them out there and get them in and around that environment. It's going to be great. There'll be a couple thousand people there. It's a good thing. Gee, if I fast forward here a little bit, and I heard you talking about trying to, focus on one game a week, that means you'll do more coaching as opposed to more regeneration with your players. Is that still on the potential of a women's soccer being a two semester sport?
No, the men are trying to do that. What the women are trying to do is we're trying to get a little bit better acclimation at the beginning of our year, moving our season forward into a little bit more acclimation into the summer to get our players better acclimated for the early portion of the year, and then stretching our season longer into So our regular season wouldn't end until closer to Thanksgiving, the week before Thanksgiving, and stretching our championship a little bit more into December. And, you know, by doing that, we can make it to where almost probably three-fourths of our weeks are single game weekends. By doing that, we don't have to change the college landscape to be a single game week all the way through. And, you know, we basically fit college soccer into what the college experience is here in the United States. What the men are trying to do is they're trying to create a full year program by changing college athletics into what soccer is around the world. They've got to, if they can do it, all the best to them. I mean, we're trying to fit into a thing where it fits with transfer portal, with what they're trying to do is, you know, if you have a kid transfer, all right, does that mean the kid can play for one school in the fall and a different school in the spring? Does that mean, how does that work? How does a lot of the other things go along with it work? What we're trying to do is we're trying to fit into what college sports still is. And, you know, they have smaller rosters. They have a smaller sport in general. There's 350 women's programs. There's 200 men's programs. We're two completely different sports as far as what women's soccer is in college and men's soccer is. The women completely support the men for what they're trying to do, and the men support the women for what we're trying to do. And we're trying to really separate into two separate sports to get what each wants without holding back the other on what they're trying to do. The men want a sport that's a little bit more towards what FIFA is doing, and we completely support them. More of the men are coming from overseas, and most of those guys are on scholarship are from overseas. 90%, 95% of the players playing in the NCAA on the women's side are from here in the United States.
G. Guerrieri, Texas A&M head coach. This Friday, they take on Colorado at Ellis Field. They've been in the NCAA tournament. This is remarkable. 28 out of the last 29 years. Again, they take on Colorado Friday night. Gee, just tell us where people can get tickets, because I'll tell you what, that's a great run to make on Friday night to see NCAA tournament action.
All you got to do for tickets, just go to 12thman.com/tickets and you can do it. But you know, really, if you come up, just come on up to Ellis Field on the Texas A&M campus, and you can walk up and you'll be able to get tickets. We will make sure that anyone who comes to the game, 7 o'clock, you'll be able to get right in. And, you know, if you're coming from anywhere in the Houston area, you can get here in about 70 minutes. It's an easy drive straight up 290 or any of the major thoroughfares. You can come up the Aggie Tollway and get here really, really easy. And it should be, like I said, Colorado is a good side. And we have a lot of players from the Houston area. You know, the Matula sisters, Margot and Macy, are two starters on our back line. You've got Miley Hayes and Taylor Pounds, two starters for us from the challenge program. Addie Armenta, another challenge player, starter for us. You've got some great, great representatives from right there in the Houston area playing for the Aggies that we would love to have your support. And these girls are tremendous people. And the winner of this game goes on to probably play the number one seed in Florida State. So we'd love to get some love from those of you in Houston.
Gee, thank you very much. Best of luck on Friday. We appreciate it. Thanks for getting us caught up. We need to bring you on again to talk about Portal and do a bit of an educational piece with you, because you got so much knowledge. Thank you very much, Gee.
Appreciate you, buddy. All the best.
All right, that's Gee Guerrieri. Aggies in action Friday night again against Colorado Ellis Field. We'll take a break here. Just a quick reminder here for the best in modern contemporary furniture. It's my friend Jan Christensen, Danish Inspirations, modern contemporary furniture, danishinspirations.com.
ESPN 97.5.com. You need to learn.
Let the boy watch. He needs to learn the way I learned from my father.
This
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. We're going to finish it off in big style here tonight. Always presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com. 713-CALL-NOW. You get in a car, boat, motorcycle accident. You might drive an 18-wheeler. You might work construction. You need the best when it comes to a personal injury attorney. It's John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. 713-CALL-NOW. And they are supporting soccer. By the way, Lamont Brands, that's where you go. LamontBrands.com for the t-shirts, Soccer Matters t-shirts and hats. All the proceeds to the 501c charity Snowdrop Foundation. American Soccer Now. He's Brian Ciaretta, frequent guest of this show. Does great work, Brian. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me on, Glenn. It's always a pleasure.
All right. I saw the great announcement. You're going to the Olympics in France next summer. You're super excited to cover that. You've done a great job of covering these young players. You and I spoke before we got on the air today. U.S. has not been in the Olympics since 2008. And you know, we kind of got to just think about that for a second, all that missed player development opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're getting good development on the club level, but in terms of integration into the full national team, it's a big setback, isn't it? I mean, usually the Olympics happens 2 years before a World Cup. And you go back and you look at, okay, 2000, they qualified. And you had Josh Wolf, Landon Donovan, and John O'Brien go from marginal U.S. national team players to World Cup starters 2 years later. It was a big thing for them. Then in 2008, look at the list of guys who were kind of in that same thing. And then, you know, Maurice Adu, Stu Holden, Josie Altidore, Michael Bradley, Benny Feilhaber, the list goes on and on. And then they were in much better shape to, you know, to really be part of the national team in 2 years later at the World Cup in South Africa. And then when they don't have it, yeah, it provides a link. It breaks that link in the chain for teams, players to have really good competition leading into the start of their, you know, being fully integrated with the national team.
Talking to Brian Ciaretta, American Soccer Now. And Brian, the coach of this Olympic team has been very much connected at U.S. soccer, Marco Mitrovic. Tell us a little bit about him, because I'm not sure the American soccer public knows that much about him.
Yeah, he was the U19 coach before he was hired. And before that, he was really learning under Veljko Paunovic, former MLS coach with the Fire. Before that, he was working with Veljko Paunovic when he was the Serbian U20 head coach in 2015, and they won the U20 World Cup. Then he went with under Paunovic as assistant with the Fire, assistant at Reading, and then he broke off on his own and took the U19 job. Naturalized American citizen from Serbia, he, you know, this is a big step up for him. I mean, I think that the initial plan was probably to have Mike Ivaris, the last U20 head coach, take this job and have some kind of continuity. But then Mikey went with Greg Berhalter's staff, and you know, and Mitrovic has done a very good job with the 19s. He's worked with guys like Ben Akramashi and Esmir Baraktarovic and a lot of other really good top young American players. So players are very excited. They had a very good first camp last month when they beat Mexico 2-1 and then Japan 4-1.
Somebody under the radar right now that we as U.S. soccer fans should kind of put in our memory banks right now. I know there's a number of them, so give us one or two.
Yeah, I mean, on this team, I think you know, a lot of them. Well, if you want to go abroad, I think Rokas Puktas is up there. He's a starter for Hajduk Split, one of the great developmental clubs and one of the biggest clubs in Croatia and all of, like, really one of Eastern Europe's one of their big clubs. You know, and then I think domestically, I really think Duncan Maguire for Orlando. I mean, 15 goals across all competitions so far as a rookie. That's incredible output. You know, and I really like Brian Gutierrez for Chicago, the midfielder, the playmaker. I think he's a guy who could make a jump to Europe and do very well for himself. You know, he really is a good two-way player. You know, those are some of the guys I think that could the other guys I think are known about on the Olympic team, like Gianluca Buzio and Tanner Tessman and those guys. But, you know, and John Tolkien, I think that those are some of the really, you know, core guys of this team. But another good guy is Bernard Camungo at FC Dallas, the former refugee, naturalized American citizen. Great story, born in a refugee camp, came to this country with nothing. Makeshift balls he played on growing up, and now he's really lighting it up for FC Dallas. And what a story it would be if he makes the Olympic team, especially on like the NBC coverage where they like to have those documentaries on those players. That he would be just perfect for that. But it's a likable team. I really do like this Olympic team.
McGuire, by the way, comes out of the college game too, which is very, very interesting. We're talking to Brian Sciarretta, American Soccer Now. Let's talk about some of the names we know. Let's start off with Sergiño Dest, who was a regular at the last World Cup. He's now at PSV along with Ricardo Pepi, starting to get playing time. That's good news, right?
Yeah, I mean, after last year, it was a disastrous loan to AC Milan. I mean, he didn't play at all. But you always knew his resume. Before his 22nd birthday, he played Champions League for four different clubs. I mean, Ajax, Barcelona, AC Milan, and then now it's PSV. So he's an unusual amount of experience for a player of his age. You know, it's just about, you know, that defense. But look, PSV is so much better than everybody else in the Eredivisie this year. I mean, 33 points from 11 games. It's perfect. He's delivering, he's getting the minutes and he's doing well. And as for Pepi, he plays for Luke de Jong, behind Luke de Jong. So the minutes are going to be a little bit limited there, but I think he's going to start showing he can play more so that Luke de Jong doesn't have to play as much at 33 years old but I think they're pleased with Pepi and Tillman to some degree too. He's a little bit more inconsistent, some highs, some lows, but all three of the guys there, they're part of a perfect product there. That's probably going to run away with the Eredivisie.
Ricardo Pepi, by the way, two goals off the bench. That is, if you are looking for a Dutch Eredivisie team, it's America's team. It's PSV Eindhoven. All right, Eunice.
And Ernie Stewart, too. Ernie Stewart's running. He has a big say in that club, too. So, yeah, it goes into the upstairs levels.
Eunice Musa at Milan has played a variety of positions. He's played in the Champions League. We saw him as a holding midfielder against Dortmund. He's played high. That versatility serving him well. How do you think he's doing at Milan?
Good. I mean, you know, last weekend he struggled a little bit because he had a cover for Christian Pulisic, who was out. So he played on the right side. Defensively, I think he's in a tough situation when he plays out wide. Those wingers can be very tough to defend in those high leagues. They're very fast, very quick. He's a guy who's born to play in the middle of the field, and he's doing well. I think when you look at his age and his experience, it's a step up for him going from Valencia to AC Milan. I think Valencia wasn't always put together when he was there, but they struggled with coaches and everything else. But you know, now he's in a more stable system. You know, he looks the part. He has, you know, he's very tidy in possession. And I think he's ahead of the curve right now with where they wanted him to be. I think he's doing better than expected.
Had a good World Cup as well, Eunice Musa. At Milan. Okay, speaking of Milan, Christian Pulisic seems to have found his club. He's been in excellent league form. Mm-hmm. There's no question about that. He's got four league goals, had an assist to Olivier Giroud in a 2-2 draw with Napoli. But finally, Christian Pulisic seems to have a manager that fully believes in him.
Yeah, you know, it's always been tough for him. I mean, and I think that's one of the reasons why Pulisic likes Berhalter. It's he puts him in a position he's familiar with. And they get it done. He seems to understand what he needs to do on the field and what's being asked of him. Yeah, I think, you know, it's good also that they're cognizant of his injury history and this was more precautionary why he didn't play over the weekend and why he was subbed out at the half in the game before because of fatigue. You know, they really want to make this work. You know, this is an investment for them and a player that they see as key as to what they want to do. So, yeah, I think with Christian, he's in a great spot and they're taking care of him too, not just, you know, playing him and running him to the ground.
Let's stay in the Serie A. Let's go over to Juventus and Weston McKennie at the Old Lady. playing a number of different positions. Mm-hmm. Obviously, many of us love his spirit with the U.S. national team. Door has kind of been opened with the suspension of Paul Pogba with testosterone and then a gambling problem with Nicola Fagiolo. So the door is open a little bit more for him, but he's in pretty good form for Juventus and getting the real minutes he needs.
Yeah, it's one of the best success stories. I mean, you know, coming off a loan where they wanted to sell him to Leeds. If Leeds had stayed up and avoid relegation, there was a trigger for a buy. So they pretty much thought he was done when they shipped him off. So when you come back into a situation when everyone said their goodbyes to you, you know, it's a little awkward. But he's been great, and I think he's exceeded Juventus's expectations. Now he played a little bit in the middle for a couple games there in a row, but generally most of his minutes this year have been at the right wing back position. You know, he's really blossomed into a well-rounded player that can play a number of positions well. He can fill in things, even if it's not where he wants to be playing. He can do an adequate job a lot of places just because he has a great understanding of the game, a better understanding than he ever has. He's learned a lot, and he doesn't make as many mistakes right now. He was a little sloppy. But, you know, look, he's earned Allegri's trust. It's not the most exciting brand of soccer over there, but I mean, he's just to be able to play at that level and being able to fill in a number of different positions and earn the trust of the manager that they need to have him on the field. You know, it's a really remarkable success story. I didn't see coming when I saw him. I thought they were going to try to find another buyer for him right away, but they got him back in the lineup. I think even Juventus is surprised at where McKennie is right now.
This goes to show you that things can change between club and player based on dynamics, based on injuries, based on how your value may soar. So
that, and he's just getting much more mature as a person too. You know, there's that. Yeah.
I mean, listen, all these young guys we watch on the national team, we're seeing them mature. I think that's one of the exciting things about them heading into 2026. Following Balogun at Monaco, kind of a push right now?
Yeah, I think he's doing well. Monaco's always an interesting team. They're typically very good. Their support is not intense. It's a laid back kind of a club, but I mean, you know, it helps so much that they, you know, the stars kind of aligned for him to move there. Their starting striker had an ACL tear in the spring in preseason. They needed to fill. They needed to find somebody, and they found somebody who was on the market who scored 22 goals in the same league last year. You know, they paid a lot for him, but you know, his movement is so good, and he relies so much on the chemistry of building of his teammates around to be able to identify his runs and get behind the defense, and you know, having an understanding of him and his teammates of knowing where he's going to be. That's the challenge with the national team, you know, is develop that chemistry, and it takes time. I think he's going to be just fine in that league, and I don't see him going anywhere anytime soon. You know, look, they're 1 point off the top of the table behind PSG, so it's he's in a good spot.
Brian Ciaretta, American Soccer. Now let's go to Gio Reyna, struggling at Dortmund with the Lotta injury. Played 45 minutes, got taken off after 45 recently. What's his situation? And you know, we've said this for well over a year. Durability seems to be a big question mark with him and his career.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think they kind of went into the whole season at, you know, with Dortmund saying, like, we got to be very careful for 3-4 months, maybe in the first half of the whole first half of the season with Gio. Whether or not they believe he's part of their future, this is a club that relies heavily on selling players, and he's a very good player, and they're going to need to play him at some point to sell him. But at some point they're going to need to show he can go more than four, even if they want to get rid of him, they're going to need to play him. Cause he's that talented. So I think, you know, they're probably not looking towards a January move. Maybe if they do, it's a loan with an option to buy. They're trying to bring this in stages, and you can kind of see where it's not playing 45 minutes. Now, I think the other day he got 60 minutes or 60 or 70 minutes. I don't know, but somewhere around there. So they're ratcheting it up. And then it got dialed back again over the weekend. There's probably a real minute load specifically that they're operating under, and then every month or every several weeks they expand upon that.
Gio Reyna, we'll keep an eye on that one because my gut tells me he's going to be moved from there at some point here.
Oh yeah,
you just can't keep doing the dance. At some point,
no,
he needs a fresh start, and they need to get some return from their investment. And we all know how highly talented he is. And I like the fact that he was playing in the 10 for the U.S. It looked nice there.
Yeah.
We'll see what the future holds. Mm-hmm. Let us – Tyler Adams, give us an update on him because he's kind of been out of sight, out of mind, and we all love him in midfield for the U.S.
It's probably best that he's out of sight, out of mind because you don't want to sit there and cling to somebody that you don't know when he's going to be playing, whether it was a botched surgery last summer and he comes back, plays 20 minutes.
Is there mention there was a botched surgery?
No, I don't know if it was a botched surgery or not. I'm just saying, I'm just speculating why it didn't work in the first place, right? You know, he had a surgery once, and then he comes back, plays 20 minutes, and then it's injured again. That's something's not right. Now, I'm just saying, you know, you don't want to have to speculate things. Things are ugly. Things are, but I'm not suggesting that, but I'm suggesting things didn't go according to plan. We're looking at probably February, March till he's back. But the real question is like, A, what's going to be left for him when he comes back? Bournemouth have been much worse than expected. They're in the relegation zone. They lost 6-1 over the weekend to Man City. So what happens if they get relegated? He probably can't run away from another relegation. You know, he did that with Leeds. But now if you're looking at a guy with, you know, damaged goods, what is Bournemouth is going to want to play him, but then what are they don't want to take the loss of selling him for a little because his market's not going to be there. He's probably going to have to stick around in the championship if they get relegated, or they'll have to be some kind of a mutual, termination or something like that. Low sale price. He's entering into a real, dangerous situation with his club and where he's going to need to find a place to play in his career. It's at a crossroads right now. And unfortunately, not a lot of it's in his hands. Like this is, he's turning himself over to medicine and, you wish the best, but at some point you just want to give him space and the national team just has to just kind of move on without him. And then if they get him back at a later date, great. If not, just keep moving on.
I'm not writing Tyler Adams off.
Oh, I'm not. Well,
that kid's got intestinal fortitude. I'm not writing.
But at some point, you don't want to be building your team. You have to almost, look. They need a back. The national team needs a backup for Tyler. They've needed a backup for Tyler for a long time. Now it's a chance to find that off. He'll be back at some point, but you don't want to just to sit there and think about him every single camp. But, he'll get back when he's back.
One man's absence is another man's opportunity, Brian. You know that
absolutely.
All right. Listen, thanks so much for coming on tonight. Great stuff going through all those players. Really good insight. We'll talk to you real soon, but thanks again for closing the show out in big style tonight.
Thanks very much, Glenn. Appreciate
all
it.
Right. American Soccer Now, Brian Chiaretta. He's up to date on all the American players and a lot of names that we don't know that if you follow his stuff, you're going to get, and you may be tipped off to future stars. That does it here tonight for Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Big thank you to Guillermo Lazo Romero, our producer. Also, subscribe at Spotify, Apple, Google. You can also get the podcast at ESPN975.com. And until next Tuesday night, remember, soccer matters.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, home of Old Greg.
I know what you're thinking. Here comes Old Greg. He's a scaly manfish. I'm Old Greg!
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.